Hello, welcome to All Out Cricket Podblast. It's my final podblast. This is Alex speaking. There's going to be a lot of self-indulgent reminiscing in this show, although I haven't actually been bothered to actually line up any edited sort of moments from the past. Mm. So what we're going to do is just intersperse a few ideas scatologically throughout the show, if you don't mind.
Scatologically?
Yeah,
crikey, fine. That's, okay. I'm not sure that... No, let's do it. Let's find... Like, what's
let's
the last
not
show?
Do that.
Let's keep Sorry. Experimenting.
Our listeners demand also structure. It's a little like jazz, isn't it? They want a basic structure and then they want free form.
They want us to riff around it, don't they? Is that what they want?
So we're going to go with the England cricket team for a change.
Right, lovely.
We thought about talking about the Test series, but what was your call on the Test series, Joe?
It was great, but it was ages ago, so let's move on.
Okay, so there we are. Phil, we're going to start with the ODI, probably with you in just a moment, and then we can go on to the...
But yeah, but just about.
Just in, isn't it? It's fine. Just for the listeners are going, no, please talk about it, though. Please talk about it.
And then the T20 last night, which I think we'll kick things off with.
Yeah.
There'll be a little county cricket.
Of course there will.
And then we'll see what's inside the magazine.
Mm. Lovely.
So there's your structure. Yeah? Let's jazz. Can we start with the T20? Who actually watched it?
I didn't.
Okay, I'm the only person who's watched it.
Tell us about it, Alex.
Tell us about it.
It was an absolute pounding.
Yeah.
I very rarely watched a T20 that one-sided. England scraped to about 135 for seven.
Mm-hmm.
It looked a good Old Trafford pitch, very noisy, very raucous, and it never looked like enough. But then Pakistan, their openers went in and bashed up with over five overs to go. They only lost one wicket.
Shardil got 60-odd.
He's fun, isn't he?
Incredible
he's
innings. And Latif also opening as well,
right.
Got 50. They were both absolutely superb. And they were smashing everything to all corners of the park. The really only thing of interest that came out of it, because I think it's just an anomaly, don't really have to read too much into it in terms of development or structure or anything. But there was a lot of discussion. Andrew Strauss was a guest on Sky, and he was bantering away with NASA.
Of course he was.
And they were talking about the England team in front of them as if... there was a disconnect, cause as if they hadn't got to a World Cup final the last time they played T20 cricket, or the time before that. Because there was Sri Lanka as well, wasn't there? Was there a T20?
Yeah, right in the middle, yeah.
But they're going, you know, this young side, really, you know, this is all good experience for them in front of a loud crowd and the pressure can get on. Because it was a loud, raucous crowd. I was thinking, they've been in the World Cup final.
Yeah.
They played all those knockouts. They almost won the World Cup. What are you talking about, this young team getting a bit of experience in front of a loud crowd for?
It's also not too dissimilar from the ODI team who have played together for a little while now as well.
Yeah. It was extremely peculiar.
I think the team is kept in perpetual youth by virtue of not playing many games in a year. I mean, there aren't that many T20 games. So to a certain extent, it is abstractly true in that how can they ever gain momentum? You only gain momentum during a tournament like we did last time when we saw an absolute, a transformation of the team over time. I thought it was a little disappointing in lineup that the Tymal Mills wasn't around. I don't know whether he was injured, but thought he was explosive last time he played.
He wasn't picked. Sam Billings wasn't picked as well, which, if you're going to have these one-off games... I think you've got to have a look at some of these guys, right? Because there is no kind of momentum to be built, as in putting your team out there each time, which I can see that in the 50-over side. One off T20, you've just got to see what these guys can do.
It's about taking the pressure off. Andrew Strauss said he thought some of his role backstage was just to take a bit of the pressure off and sort things out. So if Andrew Strauss would be on there going, oh, they're playing very, very badly, and I think this is very bad, obviously that would have been completely useless. Mm-hmm. Nobody really thought that they're a bad team. So I can sort of understand where it's coming from, but it's a bit like the England football team. It's not perpetual development project.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good team. They got to the final. Most of the time they should win. They played like absolute stinkers last night. It's probably meaningless.
Yeah.
It's utterly meaningless.
Yeah.
But it speaks of the health of our team is primarily in 50-over cricket at the moment, I believe. And I think that it does show that in comparison T20 to 50-over, because we were really excellent and thoroughly organised in 50-over cricket, as we should be, because we've been playing with that team pretty much for quite a while now.
I've got to add just on the 2020 thing. 2020 is obviously a phenomenon. It's obviously great for the game, blah, blah, blah. Two-week 20-over world competitions are great. Every 2 years, I'm comfortable with that. But these kind of tacked on the end of term type things, these sort of pointless little shindigs, they're fine for the coffers and to shake the money pots a little bit, but they're utterly pointless as anything other than a kind of vague spectacle at the end of the summer, you know?
They are.
So much so that I went swing dancing last night in Burnley.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it went really well.
Did you get really well?
Yeah, third class now. I'm really getting the hang of it. Lindy Hop last night.
Lindy Hop?
Charleston next week.
What is a Lindy Hop?
Well, I'll show you in a minute.
It's a former swing dancer.
Mm, very much so, yeah. Pioneered in the 20s.
Fantastic.
While we're on your hobbies, you also played snooker with Chris Wokes recently.
I did, Superb Link. Yes, I did. And indeed, he's the star of the upcoming, not indeed the upcoming, the now out All Out Cricket magazine. Me and Christopher Wokes had a best of three in a downtown Riley's in Birmingham, and a beer. And it was a bloody good afternoon, if I have to say. And I'm not going to reveal the score, but it was a titanic battle between two natural cueists.
You lost.
Wow.
2-1 loss. Marginal defeat. I was up on the colours in the third. Mm. Up on the colours in the third. Ooh. Then I went in off harshly. Mm. Then he got it out. Got the ball out of the pocket, stuck it in the D, and then cleaned up yellow to black just like that. It was a beautiful finish.
I can tell about Chris Wokes' personality. The whole time you were there playing, he was probably bitching away about whatever little person had annoyed him. You know what he's like? Spiteful little bugger, isn't he, Chris Wokes? He's constantly like, oh, I couldn't bear that cookie. Don't tell the press. This is off the record, but, you know.
He's remarkably well-adjusted, almost kind of eerily so.
Mm.
I've rarely met somebody who is quite as steady away as Chris Wokes. But that's not to say that he was dull, because he's not. There's a real kind of spark and
he gets reasonably feisty about the reaction to his performance in Centurion, doesn't he? In South Africa, where a lot of people said, having bowled very well in the first test and then bowled poorly in the final test, a lot of people say, well, as his line, they're not going to go back to Wokes. They're not going to go back to Wokes after that. And obviously, it's one bad match. Yeah, and we've all seen what he's done this summer.
He also added, just incidentally, just to show that there are some teeth in Chris Wokes' mouth, he said that England's reaction after Lords, going back to that Test series, remember that Test series, Pakistan?
I don't recall it.
2-2, really good series. a very old man who captained Pakistan got 100 there and then did some press-ups. And then at the end of the match, all his team did some press-ups as well, and we all laughed because it was funny, except for two particular England players in the dressing room. And they were inexplicably going berserk. And I suggested to Wokes that that might have been a slight overreaction, and he was absolutely in agreement. He said he was totally perplexed by the reaction in the dressing room to these two in particular. And most of the team were baffled by this reaction. But, they were just sort of standing back, shocked by how bizarrely these two England players were going at it. And using it as motivation for the next test match.
Oh dear. There was Mickey
revenge,
Arthur.
Vengeance in the air.
There was Mickey
Arthur. Because a 42-year-old man did some press-ups.
Well, that's it. Mickey Arthur was on Sky last night, and they were taking you, how was your tour, Mickey, and stuff. And there was quite nice chat. But they were saying, like, you know, what's the main thing about this Pakistan team that's made them good over the tour? And is it energy? I would say it's energy. Wazim Akram posited energy as the value. And he said, well, actually, for us, it's attitude. And, you know, that's why I wrote it on the wall in the dressing room. And I just thought, no need to write it on the wall.
No.
Yeah.
No need.
No.
Don't, writing the word attitude on a wall is not going to increase performance.
It's either going to remind you that you don't have it, or you already do have it. You can't. It can't be won purely by being written down.
Charisma.
Charisma. That'll do it.
Good looks.
Mm.
Yeah.
Cricket podcast.
Yeah. All right, let's take a pause there.
Talking of which, dreamy blue eyes, Chris Wokes. Dreamy, really dreamy up close.
Which you looked into as you...
Cillian Murphy-like.
Sank the... Yeah. Cillian?
I don't know, it's Cillian, a bit like Balance.
Cillian, yeah.
Balance.
Gary Blunt.
Gary Blunt.
You think after all this time we'd have learnt how to pronounce
it. 50 episodes in, still haven't solved it.
Let's have another trip down memory lane.
I wanted to reach 100 and then attack onions, because I prefer Jimmy Anderson, but onions is a pretty ordinary boiler. There's a fair amount of chat between you, though. Were you telling him that he's no drink roller? I'm just telling onion that I don't even eat onion. I don't use onion in my food. So to talk to me is a waste of time. I ain't going to use it. But definitely, if I reach 100, I'll definitely show onion that today I'm going to put him in the food.
That was Marlon Samuels. Marlon Samuels back in, I think, 2012, 2013. Yes. He doesn't even put onions in his food. So when he's batting and Graham Onions is bowling to him, it's very important for Marlon that he points out to Graham Onions that he doesn't eat onions
in his food.
And that is also his surname.
That's also his name. So he should learn from that he doesn't respect
him. He doesn't even have onions in his food.
I think it'd be more intimidating if he was talking about eating onions rather than just say I'd rather not.
I eat raw onions.
Yeah.
Two at a time. Yeah. That would be more like it.
It's worrying for the levels of banter that are going on in back rooms of cricket teams, isn't it, a little bit, that?
All right, let's double back and start talking about some other things of substance. Should we quickly
double back mean? Is double that a new American?
Through the summer.
Okay. You've got loads of sort of Americanisms in there now.
Have you got a book?
Yeah.
Have you been practicing?
Yeah.
I have. You get given one when you go through customs in America.
The other way you were talking about takeaways.
Yeah.
What's your takeaway from the show?
You know what I got that from? The NFL podcast. Do you listen? Do you follow NFL?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm sure you will be now.
Concussion Watch. I certainly will be. Mm. NFL podcast, they do their takeaways. Well, what takeaway would you take away from the ODI series, Ross, or Joe, or indeed Phil?
Nicely done.
That was the sound, listeners, of people looking away and averting our gaze.
None of you watched that series either.
I did. They got loads of runs, didn't they? They scored loads of runs.
I think one takeaway is that I believe that Alex Hales may, in the long run, be served better by focusing on 50 and 20 overs.
Well
cricket.
Said, Ross Armstrong.
I think he scored fantastically well in that game. It's a world record score, lest we forget. It was an incredible innings by him. But it took a while to get there because he's been so bogged down in this test thing that, for me, doesn't seem to be working for him. Doesn't take away from what sort of player he is, and particularly in the modern game, you can survive and stake a great reputation on being a purely 50 and 20 over player.
But then it wasn't very long ago that we were all saying how well he'd adapted test cricket. He scored runs against, admittedly, not the greatest Sri Lankan attack, but he did bat very nicely throughout that series.
He did.
A good combination of attack and defence. Pakistan's quicks, it's a decent attack he's up against. I think that the problem is people kind of think he might score runs against weaker attacks, but he's never going to quite do it against the best attacks. And he has had a decent run at it now. He's had longer than Lythe.
He hasn't scored a test ton,
which Lythe did.
Yep.
He's obviously scored, what, 3 or 4 50s?
Yeah. And of course, Robson and Compton got booted from the team with 200s under their belt. And
the difference is, actually, when Lythe got into the side, he was far and away the best batsman, and when he lost his place, actually there weren't that many candidates at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Hales is keeping his place currently when there are actually quite a few options. Hamid, who...
Talk us through the options.
Hamid seems to be going to Bangladesh. That seems to be the...
Is that the vibe?
An amazing rise. You picked him out at the beginning of the season in all
the cricket. We picked him out 2 years ago as one of the best teenagers in the country.
Now, he scored 1,500 runs at over 50 this year.
He's averaging over 50. He's the youngest Lancastrian to get 1,000 championship runs.
100 in the Roses match.
Well, and he got two. Got 200 in the Roses match. Yeah. First time ever in history that Lancastrians made consecutive hundreds in a Roses match.
Wow.
He's 19 years old.
Tell me about him as a batsman.
He bats for days and days and days, and then he comes back the next day and then has another go.
But then he sits out the white ball stuff. He's not fussed about that. I've been writing about him. Play white ball cricket.
I interviewed him 2 or 3 days ago, and I've been writing about him today. So forgive me, but I'm going to give you chapter and verse on why Haseeb has to go on tour.
Mm-hmm.
He's made 400s this year. He's made hundreds against Jeetan Patel, Imran Tahir, and Adil Rashid.
Mm.
Okay, in ascending order of quality, I would say. The 100 against Jeetan Patel was a third innings 100, over days 3 and 4, and he faced 300 balls, and Lancashire were losing wickets regularly at the other end, and it was turning big, and he hit 7 fours in 260-something balls it was in the end. And Patel bowled 38 overs in the match on a turning pitch at Old Trafford, where it obviously turns more than anywhere else in the country, and he played him beautifully. The hundreds he made against Yorkshire, Adil Rashid was playing. He also made 100 against Imran Tahir as well, who was playing at Notts. He says himself that he one of his strongest aspects is the way that he plays the turning ball. He's of Indian stock, although born and bred in Bolton, and he went over off his own bat to India a number of times to play as much cricket as he could when he was growing up as a young lad. His dad has been his coach, like Earl Woods almost. He's been his coach since he was 3 years old. And they are cricket obsessed in the Hamid family. And everything is geared towards him breaking records for England. The thing is, you can't do that unless you have that kind of innate, sort of unforced self-belief thing going on. And he just does. It's absolutely installed and ingrained in him. That is what he's going to do with his life. And he doesn't say it in a showy way, in an adolescent way, in a late teens, look at me, mum, aren't I great way. Not any of that, just in a kind of Root-esque, very quiet, very modest, but absolutely unswervingly strong in his belief as to what he's capable of being.
Incredible, because there's a history of India tours throwing up great batsmen with Cook,
exactly.
with Root,
exactly.
on those last two tours. Wouldn't it be brilliant?
So the argument is, well, is it a bit early? Should we kind of blood him over here on English pitches? Well, he scored runs against spinners, and we did it with Cook, and he was 21. We did it with Root, he was 22. Hamid is 19, turning 20 pretty soon. There is no reason on God's earth why he shouldn't go and open the batting in Bangladesh.
Well, that's and crucially, he's got the two tests in Bangladesh first as well. He's not just being thrown into a series against India. Mm. I think he has to play those games against Bangladesh. If it doesn't quite work out, still take him to India as the backup batsman, because they're going to need a reserve opener either way. Either Hamid starts, Hales will probably still go. It's hard to see him being dropped completely from the squad at this stage. Hamid gets those two tests in Bangladesh, and then you reassess when you get to India.
Could I just add one more thing as well? The second 100 he made in the Roses game, where I stress he made history, no one's ever done it before. The second 100, they were setting a declaration for a last day assault. And he went out there and played his shots and made 125 balls for the 100. Mm. So it's not like he's a one-trick pony who can get in behind it and block and protect his wicket at all costs. He has shots. He's lovely to watch. He's willowy. There's not much of him. He can play the pull. He drives right under his eyes. Bit like Kohli, when Kohli plays that almost kind of forward defensive with a slight exaggeration, enough to send it for four through the covers. He only got 30 or 40 odd here, and Mika bounced him out at the Oval, but you could just see technically, you know,
he's not going to get bounced
all
down
the way forward.
Is he?
Yeah, gets all the way forward and he gets all the way back. And you say he's not going to get bounced out. Well, he doesn't really get bounced out very much here. Tino Best has gone around the wicket and tried to kill him, and he's seen him off. Mm. Mika got him here, but it was a bit of a strangle down the leg side, to be honest. Mm. And he faces the lot and just plays beautifully. He's a fascinating character, not just because I happen to have been charmed by him. I mean, he's really unusual to talk to. I spoke to Joe Root when Joe Root was 21 or so, and Joe Root was very kind of polite but shy. Mm. And you could sense that there was something underneath that was really of steel, but it didn't come across. Mm. When you talk to Hamid, it's bizarre how mature he is. It's actually bizarre. He'll go back to questions that you've asked him 10 minutes ago. Oh, yeah, just thinking again about that kind of thing, you know. And you just don't get that. I've interviewed loads and loads of 20-year-old cricketers, 19-year-old cricketers, and you just do not get that. He is unusual.
In a weird way, it might be a bit of a better vibe for the opening thing, because I sometimes think the Cook relationship can be difficult. But if Cook's there with somebody who's quite obviously extremely young, you know, there might be actually a bit less awe. Sometimes young people, they just don't feel it.
I think it's a very, very exciting thing for English cricket.
I'm excited now. I knew nothing about it 5 minutes ago. Now I'm excited.
I know, but he's come up so quickly. I mean, you look at the second half of the season, and people who were scoring runs at the start of it, I mean, start looking at people like Robson was scoring early runs, someone like Brett D'Oliveira was scoring early runs in Division 2.
I mean, you've slipped him in, but yeah.
I slipped him in, but he was. And
David Leatherdale, Stuart Lampitt was taking
not so long ago, that's the last time I remember
80s.
As well. But,
the other one is Ben Duckett as well, who Joe interviewed at the start of the year. And to be honest, I was a little bit unsure about Duckett when I saw him initially. The aesthetic bothered me on some kind of level, but you called him up quite early and he's been irresistible.
Double century recently, Joe?
Well, yeah, big double century at the start of the season.
And finished.
Double century at the finish of the season. I mean, he's had... It's really white ball cricket that I think he'll get into the side first. Mm. I think he was not an opening batsman by trade in four-day cricket. He's ended up there by accident, really, with Northampton just being short of options, and he's done a brilliant, brilliant job of it. I don't think they think of him as a future test opener, necessarily. Mm. He'd be in any England one-day side of the last 20 years, but it just happens that we've got such a good side at the moment that Billings can't get a game, Duckett can't get a game. And it's really exciting. I'm sure he'll be part of the one-day group that goes to Bangladesh. Mm. There might even be the interesting scenario of a few more spots being available if Owen Morgan still hasn't committed to even going on this tour yet, which would be interesting in itself for a number of reasons. Whether he manages to retain the captaincy if England do well out there, given that his batting form hasn't been brilliant over the last... Well, it hasn't been very good at all. It's been a bit better of late.
What's your feeling, Alex? You're shaking your head. Do you think he has any right to hold on to the captaincy?
Yeah, I do understand the argument for it, because I think he's impressive. And when a team's doing very well and is doing that well, you know, I think you can carry for a certain amount of time. But there's also another side to that coin, which goes, is this team actually so fragile, built on such sort of infirm foundations, that if you remove Owen Morgan, all that talent suddenly doesn't function anymore? Mm. And I just think we're starting to get to the stage now where there's definitely enough experience in there that you've got to say, well, it should do, actually. There's no excuse if that team, minus Owen Morgan, doesn't do as well as it's been doing.
And you've got to, I think at this stage, you've got to trust Bayliss and Farbrace. They've done such a good job. I think you've got to give them enough credit that they can keep this dressing room together if it comes to the point where Morgan's not worth his place in the side.
Yeah.
Which might not be too far away. Because if you think, I mean, so Billings is not in that side and would be in any other one-day side in the world at the moment.
I mean, there was
then you've got Duckett pushing. You've got Bell Drummond in the background as well. I mean, these and Westley's another. You've got these players who are really going to start forcing Morgan out. And I wonder, is it interesting if Morgan really does make this call that he doesn't want to go to Bangladesh? He knows exactly what he's doing. He knows he's not just missing this tour. He's potentially putting the captaincy on the line. And even that begs the question whether he is the right man long term.
I think Butler should be at four and they should be playing especially as wicketkeeper, because I was watching last night in the T20 and they got one down, they just got one wicket, and there was, you know, they started to get 60 runs and Butler missed a straight stumping. The guy was, you know, a third of the way down the pitch, you just hit him in the chest. I thought, you're batting Adil Rashid at 11. Mm. You can afford a good wicketkeeper.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and Josh Butler batting at four is a lot more impressive than Owen Morgan batting at four.
Oh, that's true.
And Bairstow's not even in the team either.
Well, it's whether any of these players, we talk about Duckett again, you wonder whether there is going to be a guy that can do it all, a proper all-rounder in terms of being able to hit the ball out of the park as a batsman and also keep wicket. I don't know whether Ben Duckett or Billings will become that player. Or
well,
is
Duckett
that player?
Doesn't Duckett's not getting any keeping for Northampton. Yeah. This is the thing. Billings, I interviewed Billings a couple of months ago, and he said, and he's good to speak to because he's cocky, but he's also quite nice with it. And he just said, look, there's a lot of keepers around who picked up keeping late in their youth because they thought it would be a useful thing for their career.
Yeah.
He was a keeper from under nines. He says himself, I wasn't a great batsman. He was a keeper. He kept for England under 19s when Butler was just a batsman.
Yeah.
So he's like, I can actually do this job properly. And if he gets a bit more red ball cricket, he scored a big century the other day, then actually there's a chance that he could come through there as well.
I think Billings is an absolutely terrific player. I've thought that for a while. When you look to that, I think Billings was captain on the recent, when the Lions played, and they had a series of matches. And the top four all scored big hundreds.
They annihilated Sri Lanka.
It was amazing. It was great fun to watch. And you looked at those scores, and it was Duckett, Bell Drummond, Billings, and Milan I think, all got big hundreds. And that's terrific for English cricket, I think. Terrific particularly for the ODI side. Already in rude health, but there's so many people coming up. I think it's looked
wonderful. Okay, that's a very positive note. If anything, though, we're going to have a quick pause, and then as we delve back into history, maybe a darker tone will come out.
Congratulations, Dennis. What a great performance. You've beaten both myself and Lance Gibbs now to become the new world record holder. It's a great feeling, isn't it? Or it should be. I can tell you that I felt great when I got my 300th test wicket. I hope that the Australians honour you far better than I was honoured in my country.
That was fiery Fred. We said there'd be a darker tone. You may recall that from the 2013 shows. Yeah. That's actually on YouTube. You can watch him, and he's leaning on a bar with a sort of small, it's not a half pint, but it's definitely not a pint, it's a schooner of ale.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a big jumper, just looking incredibly angry about the world. Yeah. And talking of incredibly angry about the world, during the time that we've been doing the Pod Blast, we have seen Anderson and Broad hit extraordinary records on their way when you consider 2012
and
when we
levels
started.
Of anger at times.
And
well,
levels
that's
of anger.
That's what
I thought
you were going to say.
Yeah.
Well, of course, Brian Johnson was on the commentary when Fred took his 300th and he said, of course, this will never happen again in the history of cricket.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There we are. And this really leads on to the important question, which is whether you would take Mark Wood India. And I was thinking about generally the shape of the squad, actually, and who's the third spinner for you guys as well.
Wood has to go. Absolutely has to go. I think you've got to try and find a place from the side if you can, but that is easier said than done. It'd be tough to drop Chris Wokes after the summer he's had. And then you've got Wokes, Anderson, Broad. Tough to drop either of those two, and then how do you get Wood in? Possibly you don't.
I think he's 12.
But the way he's bowled at the latter part of this season, I don't know if you guys watched him on finals day.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just an unbelievable spell. The mini spell he bowled to Joe Root before getting him out was really unbelievably good. And Rob Key described it as the best performance he'd ever seen in county cricket from a bowler.
Wow.
Which is like, and Rob Key's not a Michael Vaughan, shall we say. He actually says considered things and thinks about them for more than 3 seconds before he says them. I'm reading Jonathan Trott's autobiography at the moment. It's got me angry about Michael Vaughan.
Oh really? Is it critical of Michael Vaughan?
Yeah, yeah, quite.
Well, he came out with that slur, didn't he? The worst innings he'd ever seen at Brisbane. And, insensitive to say.
He said he'd felt cheap when he saw the Sky interview that Jonathan Trott did, in which he said he had a stress related illness rather than depression. Vaughan said he felt cheated by Trott. Because Vaughan doesn't like to shout about this, but he's an expert in mental health.
Actually. Well, I think it's Dr. Michael Vaughan.
Yeah. To you, sir.
We're on their subject.
But anyway, sorry, we're veering wildly.
Well, I like it. It's got a bit of grit in it. I remember back in an old show, Pardon the Nostalgia, going through Atherton's thing, and Atherton clearly didn't like Flintoff. And he starts sort of reading between the lines. It's good stuff, isn't it? You find one player who doesn't like another player, then you talk about it. It's like gossip around the water cooler.
There's been no shortage of controversy over in the history of the pub last
year. Well, what about
I did that burp
spinner.
As well last
you did
year.
That
I remember
burp one, yeah,
the
that
infamous
was big.
Burp.
Rob the cricketing world, that one. Reverberation still being felt to this day, I think.
Are you taking Samit Patel to India?
Well, I'm certainly not. Silly. I mean, I saw you put on, spoke about Ollie Rayner, and I think Ollie Rayner is, you look at the stats now, Ollie Rayner's taking 45 wickets, I think.
Joey's a very loyal friend.
He is, but at 20, I mean, wow, he's had a great season again. It's not the first time he's been the top spinner statistically in the country.
And Lords isn't exactly a raging Bunsen as well. No. He's got there. So he's also, as Phil, I mean, he's the nicest man in cricket. I spoke to him early this year and he wasn't sure if he was getting a new deal at Middlesex, and he was looking at being the kind of cricket coach at private school, these kind of options.
Yeah.
He wasn't sure. He's modest to a fault, and I think that's might well hold him back as well.
Yeah.
But he was thinking he might not get a contract in Middlesex and no one else might pick him up. And this is ridiculous. This is a guy who's taken 50 wickets in a season previously. He's just about there now, I think, this year.
I would take Rayner, incidentally. Yeah, and I don't know the lad. I've never met him. I know you speak very highly of him. I would take him. Initially, when I picked my squad about
instead
a month ago.
Instead of Rashid?
No. I picked my squad on alloutcricket.com because you can do a squad selection.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And I picked my squad, and I actually picked Crane as my third spinner, the leggy. Changed my mind on that.
He hasn't taken any wickets.
Hasn't taken enough. He's taken 20-odd. Not enough. And he's too young and he's too raw. And if you're taking one outlying leggy who's probably not really going to do the job anyway, then it's probably not wise to take two. The batty thing has been talked about. Well, you know, bless him, he's a stalwart, but no, not for me. Rayner would be useful, I think. I think as that kind of third spinner who might end up as the first spinner, that kind of thing that England always do when they go to the subcontinent. In 1993, they went to India, they picked Salisbury as a net bowler, and he ended up...
And that was a great success.
Starting. Yeah, it was great.
And what about Ansari? What's happened to him?
He's just consistently injured. And when he has played, he took 6 for 40-odd against Notts to win, their first game. But either side of that, he's either been injured or he's been ineffective.
His numbers are pretty good for the year, but it's largely based on that performance. He's the most tempting because if you take him, Mo, and you take Rashid, you've got a leggy, you've got an offie, and you've got the slow left armour. And that's going to be pretty tempting for them. They're talking about Liam Dawson, and that seems to have got a bit of traction in the press. I can't really believe they can take Dawson.
It's Vaughan again. He's got something about him, he says.
I just think, like, if
Dawson
they take Dawson...
actually represented by Vaughan's company?
Probably.
Vaughan's
got
management. He probably isn't.
But if you
get,
like,
officially.
But Leach has taken 50 for Somerset. Rayner has taken near on 50 for Middlesex. If you go and take Dawson just because he bats a bit and he's a good fielder, that's not what they need. England's batting is so deep. Yeah. If the best spinner couldn't catch a ball and couldn't hit a ball, he should be in there as the third spinner, because that's the thing that's going to be valuable.
I think they'll take Ansari if they possibly can justify it, I think, in terms of fitness and other factors. But the more you look at Rayner, who still remains pretty much an outside pick, I would say, it does look very attractive in terms of him being one of the leading spinners who's done it on more than one season. I mean, you look at someone, and generally, as I was looking at, it's generally the case that if you score the most runs in Division One, you get to play in the England team. That seemed to have been the case perhaps the past four seasons. If you look at Bairstow, Lythe, Robson, Compton, all these people have done that and quite rightly been given an option to play
for the England
team.
Incredible statistical analysis. That's really good.
It is true. But Keaton Jennings has come through, I was going to say earlier, and in the second half of the season, or when it really counts, actually, he's done a great, great job. I don't think he's going to be in the shake-up to go, but...
He might have been if Hamid wasn't there. That's the
thing.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. If he wasn't, I think that would have been his go. But so,
he's got
so
a great Nashville name, though, hasn't he?
Great Nashville name.
The very best of Keaton Jennings.
But Stoneman also was very well thought of as well. He sort of out-batted Stoneman in that sense, and even out-batted Borthwick, who still probably has a better chance of going on that tour. I don't think
any of those three from Durham are going to feature in the shakedown, really.
Borthwick's faded, but I mean, from being that basically everyone was saying he was going to bat three, to then suddenly he hasn't really got a score since then. Timing is everything with these things. And there's still not. Alex Lee scored a century and then an 88 in the second innings, or an 80 in the second innings. He's obviously very well thought of. Again, if it wasn't for Hamid, he would be the one that everyone was talking about.
And I still think Lee's has got a good chance, because although he hasn't kicked on perhaps in the way some thought that might have done the last couple of years, he has scored good runs. He's getting close to 1,000 this year.
I think he's gone beyond that now. Because Lythe got a century today, but Lee's has actually scored more runs than Lythe this year, which I was surprised by, because I thought that they both had good years.
Basically. Yeah. But still only just... those runs probably just put him over just about... averaging 40 for the year, not as impressive as someone like Hamid, and not quite as impressive stats really as Rayner again. As for
are we all picking Ollie Rayner? What a lovely.
I'm not picking Ollie Rayner only because I know they're not going to pick Ollie Rayner, and so
I'm not sure about that.
I sort of
genuinely
vaguely want to predict something that's going to happen.
So who is it then? Who is that third spinner? Assuming they take one.
So not Mason Crane, probably not Zafran Sawaz.
Well, it's a very good point. I mean, how did Kerrigan do this year?
I didn't hear much about it.
There's no sniff of that either.
I think if Ansari's fit, they'll take him.
I don't think it's just a kind of cute thing to talk about for the hell of it. I do genuinely think he's got a good chance.
Mm. He's been the lines as well. He's not like Leach is a complete wild card, because he hasn't really had a brilliant record until this year, and he's never been involved in any England sides. Mm. Whereas Rayner has been away with the Lions. That's what we don't know. We don't know what the coaches there made of Rayner, whether they thought this guy's a test cricketer, because that is as much as a bigger part of the Lions as what you do on the pitch, really. Yeah. They're assessing you as a character.
Yeah.
And that's the unknown here.
What about the batsmen? So Ross and I went to Lords. We had an incredible day at Lords. It was the final day of the Lords Test match. Pakistan won, but it was brilliant. England were trying to bat all day. They never quite got their nose towards safety. It was just about as good a day's Test cricket as I could have possibly imagined. Mm. And we got to see the lineup. And on that day, the day you watch is the day that cements it in your mind. What I saw was, in Vince, who I'd never watched bat before, a guy who, it wasn't exaggeration about style, he looked like a Test batsman, and then probably did what he does every single innings. And then I watched Balance and Bairstow actually try and save the game. I'm not convinced at any point watching Vince he was actually trying to save the game. He was just batting as Vince bats. And I think that sort of carries a bit more weight. I know that he's not doing what he did against New Zealand, which is almost like looking at the sideboard as the ball cannons into his own stumps, but there's still nothing that Balance has done this summer that makes me really feel great about him, even though everyone knows he's got it sort of mentally.
Agreed.
So we've got a really peculiar situation going on at the moment, and I don't know quite how they're going to fix it, because there's only a certain number of people you can blood in Bangladesh and India.
Well, that's why it's tempting to pick all these all-rounders.
Well, that's right.
Moen could go up to four.
That's right.
Then you have just a team of all-rounders beyond that, really.
I think if you accept the fact that you're not going to get rid of Hales and Vince and Balance, you probably end up with... No, I'm just saying like what they're probably going to do. I actually probably would get rid, but say they're not going to, and they get rid of a couple of them, one of them survives. You've still got Moen at five. Bairstow, actually, you'd have Stokes at five, Moen at six, Bairstow at seven, Adil Rashid, Wokes at eight, Adil Rashid at nine, Broad at ten.
There's a lot of batting in there.
There's so much batting that you don't have to go
key roles.
Bring them all up to the spot and chuck in another bowler.
Yeah, it's actually number four, I think, which is the big one. And I believe, I'm actually a big Gary Bance fan, I believe he can do that. I don't believe he's shown he can do that yet. And I don't believe that him scoring runs in Bangladesh, should he go, would prove anything either, because he did that against not so great attacks for a long time for England, rather brilliantly, I would say. And I think you shouldn't discount that. But I think I would certainly take him, because I think he's on last chance saloon. I think a couple of bad innings, when they'll dispense with him, what with that new breed coming through. And I think that'd be a bit of a shame for a cricketer who was so promising and so easily averaging 50 in every single format of the game for so long. But I've got a feeling that players like Duckett, as maybe slightly more dashing 4 and 5 style players, are going to look very attractive to the current management.
We haven't mentioned the highest run scorer in the country as well, which is Tom Westley.
Of course.
So he's in my squad.
Who does bat 3 for Essex.
Yeah.
Which is, I suppose it was the position to be filled. Now Root's got that one, but we're looking at 4. He bowls a bit of spin, quite an effective spinner. Bowls quite a lot of overs for Essex.
He's a great package.
And crucially, Alistair Cook stands at the other end and watches him score big runs this year. So he's another one that you've got to be there or thereabouts.
It's interesting as well when you talk about experience and blooding new players and all of that. Well, Hales has played 10 test matches or 11 test matches. He's still a kid. He's still a kid at test match level and totally unproven. And then you extend it even further. Well, Root made his debut in India and made 70 at Nagpur. I think it was Nagpur. Cook made 100 at Nagpur on his debut, and suddenly they're playing test cricket, and it moves very, very quickly. So these players that we'd feel we'd be going in far too raw into an India test match, if you're picking Westley and Hamid just for 2 test matches in Bangladesh beforehand, well, you're kind of either good enough or you're not, really. And a player can play 25 test matches and be experienced and still not be good enough, and we've seen that. We've seen that play out. So I wouldn't be too concerned about playing a so-called unproven player, because you have to bring them in at some point, and it's a constant merry-go-round anyway.
Plus, you've got some greats around them. You know you've got Cook.
Yeah.
You know you've got Root. You know you've got that lower middle order.
Yeah. Personally, I love Moeen Ali, and I know that he's a star of this show. And I think what he did this summer confirmed once and for all that the kid can play test cricket, and that he has the temperament to play test cricket. And I think after Root and Cook, he's the best player of spin in the country. I would bat him at 4 or 5. Definitely. I wouldn't bat Vince. I wouldn't bat Balance. I think the ceiling for Balance is quite low. I don't fancy Hales as a test match opener, and never have. If he hadn't got cleaned up with a no ball at Lord's against Sri Lanka on 60-odd before he got 90-odd, then he'd have had a very, very flat summer. Not just a flat one.
I think Moeen also responds well to having pressure on him as a batsman. His centuries tend to come in quite difficult situations, and he's performed better when actually Stokes hasn't been in the team. And I'm not suggesting you don't play Stokes, but what that indicates to me is somebody who responds well to responsibility and being asked to do something.
The problem
is obviously
though,
a batsman
who did, last time we went to Asia, we decided let's shove Moeen up the order.
Yeah,
and that obviously didn't work. And there is. It's almost tempting to kind of do it again. If it hadn't happened as badly the last time, then it does kind of fit the makeup of the side quite
opening's
well.
Opening's a big ask, though, isn't it?
It is, but number 4 is a big ask as well. Yeah. And he has played his best innings from 7 and 8. 7 particularly, isn't it, I think, where he's got an unbelievable record.
I think if Moeen plays 7 test matches, batting 4 or 5 in Asian conditions, I think he will turn up and I think he'll perform. That's my personal feeling. Mm. Horses for courses. Send him to Australia and bat him at 4. No thank you. No thank you at all. But out there, different story. I play him, definitely.
Certainly 5, but I think 4's the big one if he doesn't bat there. I think Westley sounds like a great shout, to be honest. I think Milan is an outside bet as well, also has great caliber.
It is interesting and fascinating what they're going to go with. I think they announced the team next week, Joey, is that right?
I think so, yeah. It was meant to be this week, but they put it back. They wanted another round of Championship games, which shows just how much is riding on these couple of rounds.
I've got to say, I've loved this season. I've just absolutely loved this cricket season. It's been one of my favourites. The Test series was great. Forget the Sri Lanka bit at the beginning, but the Pakistan stuff was great. It's been vintage stuff watching county cricket here at the Oval. Division 1 cricket, 4-day cricket, it's been glorious. It's tough, hard cricket between two good teams week after week. And, you know, if we can generate a bit more money for the game, and if we can hold the fans that we've got and the people who are playing it and keep them playing it and keep them energised by playing cricket, then I think the future's good for the game. You know, it's been a really rousing summer for me, and you wouldn't normally hear that.
Well, I've got a really super positive way of building on that before we hit some jazz.
Fantastic show. Oh, well then,
you've got children, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
You should take them.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic show.
But Jeffrey, you're 74.
Everybody from 7 to 74, and I'm not 74 till October.
Yeah.
Anybody could enjoy it.
Yeah, I like her singing.
Yeah.
I think she's different, unusual. She's clever. She writes her own material with people. I mean, she's got to... Not everybody does that. A lot of good singers around who sing other people's songs.
Yes.
But she's clever enough to write and sing. She's attractive, very pleasant. Yeah, very feminine, very nice natured, good technique.
Well, that's Jeffrey Peacock on Katy Perry, which is one of the highlights. what I really don't understand
that.
At the end there is Tufnell goes in, he goes, good technique, and everyone goes, and I think, like, oh dear, Tuffers. Mm. You know what I mean? Didn't need that, did it?
Didn't need that.
I'm not sure we did either. That's really turned my stomach.
Yeah, that's a little bit.
I like someone who says, I think I mentioned this last time, but very feminine.
Very feminine.
That's my...
She writes her own material.
I'm not entirely sure that's...
No.
Well, people get paid a lot of good money to Max Martin, notably.
It's
the guy that writes her songs, I believe.
Well, talking of songs, let's have a little light jazz as we cruise out of this show.
Yeah. Oh, and thank you for joining us on another... All Out Cricket Pod Blast. One of the last, I'd say. Alex, would you?
One of the last.
This is the last.
Only the last with me.
It goes next week.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know why. I'm pulling back from it. I don't want it. Maybe it makes me too emotional to say the last. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, maybe we should do them when he comes back. If he ever does.
Well, that's right. Three, I think, and every listener listening right now will be going, I'll wait another 3 years for this. I'd wait forever for another one of these.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. So,
they'd be right to do so.
As they've alluded to, I'm going to leave the show. But I understand that there are some very loosely formed ideas about a general intention amongst of you to maybe talk a little more
on
a future occasion.
Yeah.
We're going to keep it cash. Consider this a soft landing on the marketing front. This is a soft landing.
Yeah.
Something will happen.
I think this is going to create a lot of debate around the Twitter sphere, I think.
Yeah.
Debate on, my friends.
Yeah, so there's a new issue of All Out Cricket magazine which has hit the stands this week. It's featuring Chris Wokes. Any other features in the mag that you particularly enjoyed, Phil and Joe?
Yeah.
There are other features in the mag that you
enjoyed. That's true. We've got
Simon.
We know that.
Have you heard of him?
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
He's got quite a quick.
The moments that made the legend.
He describes his career-defining performances in a rather lovely fashion.
Mm.
Right back from the early days as a school student in Pakistan.
Mm.
I also interviewed Shaan Masood, the bloke who didn't get any runs.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. But he was absolutely brilliant talking about Pakistan's triumph from inside the dressing room. So it was nothing about him and his inability to play Anderson outside off stump and all of that. Mm. It was all about the...
Inability.
About the, yes, as I said. Mm-hmm. It was all about the nature of their team and how it all came together and the cult of Misbah, etc., etc. And it actually comes out as a really beautiful piece
of
work.
Did he mention that the word attitude had been written on
the
wall?
He's far too eloquent to reduce himself to such platitudes.
Yeah, all right, well, lovely. Thank you, listeners. Ross and I started this show in April 2012.
Wow, that's true. Farewell.